From KQED Public Radio, this is Capital Notes, a weekly look at California politics. Anthony York is the editor of Capital Weekly. All dressed up today.
Yes.
Suit and a coat tie. And tie.
I know. I have schmutz on my sleeve, though. I
define schmutz.
Stuff.
Spell it.
Anyway. S-C-H-M-U-T-Z.
T-Z? Yeah. Schmutz. I've never really known how to spell schmutz.
No. You should talk to my rabbi.
So Anthony York is here with me, as always, and we're talking politics for this week ending, what is the week ending? May 7th?
May 8th.
May 8th. I am really a first week of May. How about that, folks?
Okay.
I can't keep track of the calendar. So there's a lot going on this week.
It was busy, yeah.
I mean, you know, given some of the podcasts that we've done lately where we've said, well, a little bit happened here, a little bit happened here, I would actually call this a newsy week in politics.
Well, and this is just the big stuff that we're going to talk about. We're not even going to talk about the sea of bills moving through the legislature. Yeah. There's lots of those, too. But
that stuff is a snoozer, I'm sorry to say. There are just too many bills. You just can't follow that stuff.
But we're not even going to talk about the big ones, are we?
No. Let's get to the big stuff. Let's get to the big special election stuff. Okay, so we need to talk about the way the campaign's going. We need to talk about more pressure from the state's finances. And we need to talk about a new leader of the Republicans in the Assembly. Where should we begin?
Let's begin with the campaign, the way the campaign's going.
I wanted you to pick. okay, so this week we saw new television ads from the Yes on 1A through 1F campaign, the burrito campaign, as I've called it before.
Interesting. And yet they're advertising themselves as a taco.
Well, yeah, and therein lies. Right. It was, I called it a pivot this week. And I really do think it was a pivot in message and style. What do you think?
Strategy, absolutely. I think it's a honing of the message and I think in some ways they found their groove in terms of the messaging, the way in which they're going to use the governor, the way in which they're using, as we predicted, the teachers and the firefighters, the difference between the paid media campaign and the so-called earned media campaign.
But it's late to find your groove.
It is late, yeah. and it might be too late. I mean, there's a new poll out today that we can talk about.
That's right, because it's embargoed until Thursday night. This doesn't up until Friday morning.
Right.
We're in the
there
clear. Public Policy Institute of California, new poll, not really that much different from the field poll from the week before, showing all of them, with the exception of the feel-good marshmallow Prop 1F, losing.
I'm going with Splenda, artificial sweetener.
Yes. Fake sweetener?
Yes, the saccharin measure. Yeah. But marshmallow works.
So the poll shows them all still going down if the election were today. And this pivot, though, let's talk about the pivot for a moment, because the ads, no longer does even the logo say yes on 1A, B, C, D, E, and F. It just says yes on 1A and 1B.
Yes.
Some could argue it's the heart of the campaign. I would say it's also the heart and the wallet of the campaign, because that's where all the money's come from. People who want to see 1A, the spending restraint reserve tax increase, go into effect, and people who want to see 1B, the extra money for schools, go into effect. They're the people who've paid for the campaign. These are the two issues they care about the most.
Right, and now we're seeing the governor's campaign fall in line with the messaging of the California Teachers Association, which we don't have time to get into the ironies of that fact, given the history of the Schwarzenegger administration, but...
Well, given the given the history of the Schwarzenegger political operation and the teachers' political operation.
Right. Fair enough. Although if you go back to 2002, perhaps it's just coming full circle because
that's true.
The teachers worked with
on the after school initiative that got his that launched his career in politics.
Yes.
But
now, even though it is still technically a yes on A through F committee, the campaign commercials are only focused on yes on A and B. The irony of this, which you've written about and we pointed out in Capital Weekly this week, is that at the time when the campaign messaging is focusing on the measures that are perhaps the so-called structural reform measures, Prop A is a spending restraint. Proposition B gives some money to schools. Ironically, the message from the governor, not in the commercials but in the earned media campaign, is sort of sounding the dire fiscal alarms about the short-term budget crisis.
And which is the heart of C, D, and E, because they're the ones that have money for the budget dealing.
So there's sort of this disconnect here between the messaging of the paid media campaign and the tenor of that campaign and how they're trying to drive support for those measures home.
Well, let's talk about the paid media campaign for a second, because what's interesting about the ads the yes on 1A, 1B, because there were two ads this week. There was the firefighter with the perfect little smudge of soot on his forehead and saying, we need A and B. And then also saying, if we don't get A and B, we're going to have I can't even remember what the number is right now, but a lot of public safety officers laid off across the state.
Right.
And the justification from the campaign for that was not only the failure of the tax increase in 1A, but I think the failure of CD&E, which provide money from the lottery and early childhood and mental health programs.
Well, there's two different things, and perhaps this merits sort of parsing out again. If 1A goes down, if 1A is not passed, then the tax increases that were passed by the legislature this year, they sunset. They go away.
They go away faster.
Go away faster. They go away after the 2009-10 budget year. And so this now becomes, in the new ads for the Yes on A and B committee, the new A and B ads, since it would take away 3 years of tax increases, that becomes $16 billion in cuts. And this is the number that is now in these new ads.
Right.
You know, that number is debatable. This gets into your definition of a cut. And
not to mention, they're not cuts in the immediate year, which therein lies part of the messaging problem about, you know, what's the doomsday now versus the doomsday later.
Absolutely. And the most immediate short-term effect, the measure with the most immediate short-term effect on the budget is Prop 1C. That's the lottery borrowing measure that would allow up to the the lottery modernization measure.
Well, let's call it what it is. It's a cash advance from the lottery. That's what I finally called it in the piece I did this week. It's getting money early. It may not be borrowing,
to borrow again,
but it's a total cash advance.
Right. Anywhere from 5 to now we're hearing up to $10 billion. Borrowing or an advance on future revenues, whatever you want to call it.
It's like a payday loan.
It is. What is the interest on those loans?
Not good, which therein lies the problem.
We could talk about short-term loans. Actually, we're going to segue into that here with the new LAO report.
But keep going on this one.
But on this messaging issue, I think it's interesting on a couple of different levels. Number one, the fact that the governor is not in these ads, that you have the quote-unquote ordinary heroes, teachers, firefighters. I guess they can't get the nurses. The Nurses Association.
No, the nurses are opposed to this.
It doesn't mean you can't find a nurse, right? Well, but I think we called this one several weeks ago about what these ads would look like. I mean, that's the rule. If you're running a ballot initiative campaign in California, get yourself a firefighter because that seems
and a teacher.
Yeah, I mean, but really, I mean, you got to wonder how many whether viewers start to tune these messages out. I mean, it's another – we see firefighters on everything from Indian gaming compacts to term limits to now to spending restraints, right? So but that's the paid media campaign, the teachers and the firefighters. Meanwhile, the governor is going up and down the state talking about all the specific cuts that will have to be made if these measures are not passed.
Well, he is kind of and now let's talk about the governor's role because – this week, first of all, this is kind of his political role and his official role, and he tries very hard to say they are different. But the reality is there's one Arnold Schwarzenegger. There's one
Total Recall?
I was going to say in the movies there's more than one. In real life, I'm told that there's one Arnold Schwarzenegger. I'm told that he has one brain. And so it's kind of hard to split out these things, I think. So the governor's official office this week started giving the hint to different interest groups that there were big cuts coming if the ballot measures fail. And again, the ones that have money for the coming budget year. So local government was told that they'd probably take $2 billion from local government. Firefighters were told that they would eliminate as many as 1,700 firefighting positions. Education groups were told about a $3.5 billion cut to education. Which actually doesn't really have anything to do, I don't think, with the ballot measures failing. It's the fact that there's too little revenue in the state. But that's another story.
Right.
But so there were doomsday scenarios laid out to the interest groups. That was the official government office role. Meantime, the political campaign just happened to start running ads from firefighters and teachers saying, calamity if you don't pass these measures.
It does fit nicely, doesn't it?
It does somehow, coincidentally, fit nicely. And, of course, it has opened up this whole criticism from the opponents – of that the governor's using scare tactics, to which the governor's advisors were really unhappy with anybody who reported in the press that someone might call these scare tactics, because they say, well, the other side hasn't given a credible solution as a replacement for these taxes and things like that. That being said, I mean, the governor is really pushing that point. And so he's pushing them in official events.
Right.
And then again, we just saw him on the fire lines on today, on Thursday in Santa Barbara. Right. There is a really troublesome wildfire in the Santa Barbara region that almost
caused by the budget crisis.
But it almost pushes home the point.
Right.
You wouldn't want to wish for something like that to help sell your case. But, I mean, maybe it does sell the case, even though these polling shows that the voters, the PPIC poll, interestingly enough, shows that voters are tuned in to this now. A lot of them are right. watching news reports about the special election, and they're still not convinced. They right. still don't like the measures.
And we'll see if this sort of desperation message works, you know, the dire straits. And, you know, and it's not just the governor is the chief deliverer of that message, but it's not just the governor. I mean, this week, Senate leader Daryl Steinberg held a press conference, and he, you know, he laid out a similar type of scenario, and his message was, hey, look, these aren't scare tactics. This is reality.
Yeah, that was almost the direct quote. Yeah.
You know, I think that this is now the campaign has found its footing. And, you know, of course, it's these people speaking in their official governing capacity and not in an official campaign capacity. That being said, the campaign has sort of found its footing in terms of a message and the message that it's going to close with here in the last 2 weeks. Now, whether or not it works, you know, remains to be seen. We saw this poll today. All these measures have a very, very large hurdle to climb, except for the marshmallow, which doesn't have a hurdle.
That's 1F, in case you're not following us, which is the one that supposedly says you can't have a salary increase for lawmakers during a deficit. Fine. Everybody supports that.
Right, right. And yes. But the other measures face a more uncertain political future.
And I, you know, and it's and again, it goes to the, you know, I think people are going to look back. There'll be a whole lot of there'll be a whole lot of analysis to do after the election. You know, people like you and me being, I guess, whatever we're going to be on the 20th of May. You know, snarky,
analysts,
mean, critical. I don't know.
Thoughtful, insightful.
Thoughtful, insightful, much better. But when you, but you know, there's going to be a whole lot of time to look back and say, this was one of the fundamental problems. Are you selling a short-term fix? Or are you selling a systemic reform? And the 1A campaign, I just have to say this quickly, about 1A, no one's talking about the spending restraint formula, the 10-year rolling average. No one's even hardly talking about the reserve fund anymore. They're talking a little bit about it. They're all talking about the tax increase and the ramifications of not having that money. And so here we have completely, you know, another example of a pivot. Here we have pivoted into, as you said, the messaging of, you know, pass these or we're screwed, and not the we want to fix the system in Sacramento, which was the first ad, which was a feel good. Everybody wants to fix the system.
Right.
And right. So, I mean, you know, maybe someone will say, wow, if you had started this campaign earlier, might your numbers have moved?
Perhaps.
Who knows?
Or maybe this was the plan all along and voters,
and
they just figured voters weren't going to tune in until the last couple of weeks of the campaign. And I guess we'll talk again on the 19th, or knowing our schedule, we'll talk again on the 21st.
No. We'll do an early one this time.
Oh, okay.
We'll have to. We'll get our day books together.
We'll deal with that.
My people will call your people.
Great.
shifting into topic two, pivoting, since pivot is the key word of this week, maybe. Pivoting into topic two, here on Thursday, the nonpartisan legislative analyst released another gloomy assessment of the state's finances. This one is about how much cash we're going to have in the bank over the coming year. I think this gets a little confusing for people about when they hear budget deficits and cash crunch. They tend to think they're the same thing. They're related, but they're not the same.
No, they're not.
I was going to say that the way I've been trying to get, you know, my head around it today is to kind of say, okay, Anthony, you get your paycheck every month, theoretically.
Right. So I know that over 12 months, I will have $30,000 to spend.
On a good year.
Right.
Okay, but so you know what your annual salary is. That's one issue. But let's say in any given month, you have too many bills for the amount of money that comes in that month.
You have to pay your property tax in October.
So maybe you take a little bit of money out of your vacation account or out of
I have a vacation account?
Woohoo! You know, maybe somebody like
wow.
you. So in other words, you are cash depleted in any given month.
Right.
Now, those two are related, but they're different. And so the Ledge Analyst report today said that over the course of the budget year that begins July 1st, that we could have as much of a cash shortage as $23 billion that we would have to borrow from Wall Street in some kind of short-term financing to help us with the ebb and flow. And it's caused partially by the horrendously bad economy that has depleted tax revenues. It's caused by the fact that we're going into the budget year with a bad situation. It would be exacerbated, that $23 billion number, going back to speaking of the campaign, would the $23 billion includes the fact that the voters would reject some of those measures on the ballot,
right,
which would cause financial pressures. If they say yes, right, to the lottery and the childhood and mental health money, then I think the number is somewhere around $17 billion.
Right.
But the Ledge Analyst's point in all of this, just to try to cut to the chase since I've made this too long, I think the Ledge Analyst's point is legislature needs to act fast. It needs to try to cut that cash flow problem down by, shocker, spending cuts or tax increases.
Or revenue increases.
Yeah. Right. And it also throws a real word of caution to going to the feds and asking for help from the feds, because that is a popular discussion around the Capitol now, that we would get either a backing of our borrowing by the feds, or the feds would actually give us money, would lend us money.
Right.
And what I found interesting about the Ledge Analyst report, and then I'll shut up, Anthony. I know I'm talking too long.
No, I'm riveted.
What I found interesting from the Ledge Analyst report is the sense that one of the things that the feds could do is put strings to a deal, including a string that says, maybe we want to see a multi-year budget plan from you, California, before we give this money. And maybe we want to dictate some of the demands that you'd have to do to balance your budget. In other words, the feds becoming a part of the budget process, which would be complicated and controversial.
I can hear the Republicans laughing now that the Obama administration is going to be the harbinger of fiscal restraint. But and that cash crisis, I mean, one thing that stood out in that LAO report today was that the cash crisis is going to be quick. We could be as much as $13 billion in the hole as early as October.
Yeah, it's not at the end of the year, right?
Right, and the LAO pointed out, said, you know, the credit markets are still tight, and it could be hard to get those loans. So, this once again, I mean, I think this adds to the drumbeat. I mean, I think you're going to see this mentioned by the governor and by other proponents of the ballot measures, and it also begs the question of what we're looking at on May 20th. Certainly, if these measures pass, it will alleviate some, but not all of that problem. But even if they do pass somehow, some way, we're still talking about very quickly needing a new round of cuts and or revenue increases.
And if we can't get them, imagine, you know, think about what we went through in the end of 2008, beginning of 2009, with all these delayed payments that the controller was doing to try to stockpile cash. So we weren't paying a lot of vendors. We stopped paying income tax refunds. And then multiply that by the increased size of the cash crunch that he's talking about now. And yeah, the Ledge Analyst puts it in there. I mean, maybe you start talking about state worker paychecks. Maybe you start talking about things that seem really severe because we have to have a certain amount of cash to pay the first two things which we have to pay. California's Constitution says we have to pay education above all else and debt service.
Right.
And then after that, it's debatable.
Yeah. And you know, what's interesting now is a lot of that money, I mean, a lot of the stuff that got shut down at the end of 08, beginning of 09, like the infrastructure projects now.
Yeah, there's a great example.
A lot of those projects now are leveraged with federal stimulus dollars. So what would the impact of shutting those projects down be? I mean, would we then lose out on federal stimulus dollars? Do we even have the ability to shut those projects down because they're federally funded and the federal guidelines on how that money has to be spent might preempt us from shutting those projects down? I mean, I think these are open questions that people are looking at now, but that we might not have some of the tools in our toolbox to get around a cash flow crisis that we had even last year.
And all of this is probably a good reason that, A, we're California and we're big and so we matter to the federal economy. And two, that Arnold Schwarzenegger.
And that,
yeah, exactly. And two, that Arnold Schwarzenegger likes Barack Obama.
Yes.
And that's a mutual admiration society between the new president and the Republican governor because the Republican governor might need him.
Well, and as we speak, you know, the Assembly Speaker Karen Bass is in Washington, D.C. Again. Probably
making some of the same points.
Yeah, and I'm sure certainly with her ears open and talking a lot, and I'm sure with a handout as well. I mean, looking for you know, some additional support and at least federal understanding of the state budget crunch.
So let's pivot again.
We're pivoting.
Everybody move with us.
We could have segued Karen Bass into...
Well, is it a pivot or is it a segue? I mean, you know, come on. It's a semantics game here. All right, so let's segue into topic three. Speaking of leadership in the assembly.
Ah, there we go.
There's a new Republican leader in the assembly.
New leader elect.
Well, new leader elect, sorry.
Yes.
Okay. New leader elect, be technically proper. As of the day we're taping this, as of Thursday. So, Mr. York, you broke all the news on this on CapitalWeekly.net. How's that for your plug?
Hey, good. That's good. Capital with an O.
Mm-hmm. And yes. You also had it on your Twitter, too, because then I felt really pressured and I had to retweet.
I was retweeted. I
did retweet you.
That's an honor.
Yes. It was quite a tweet.
Tweet.
Okay, sorry. That was my Elmer Fudd thing. Please. I'll shut up.
I'm
go ahead.
A little slow. Sam Blakeslee, a Republican in his third term from San Luis Obispo, considered by many to be a moderate Republican. Blakeslee is sort of a coastal Republican in the traditional mode, perhaps differs with his caucus, certainly on some environmental issues, and is seen as a more, in the words of our friend Mike Gardner in the press conference this morning, more green than
fellow reporter. Yes.
You know, and Blakeslee is a top lieutenant and close friend of the outgoing leader, Mike Vallines. I think
Vallines called him one of my best friends today.
Yeah. And I think that this really does show that Vallines, although Vallines recognized that it was time for him to step aside and that the caucus, for ideological consistency, among other reasons, needed a leader who had not voted for these tax increases heading into the next budget fight. And yet Vallines still had enough command of his caucus that he was essentially able to handpick his successor on the way out.
Mike Vallines from Fresno, who is the outgoing leader, is now the second Republican leader in the state capitol to exit stage left or stage right. Sorry, I got to be totally Republican here. Exit stage right this year. Dave Cogdill in the Senate lost his seat, probably more acrimoniously than Vallines lost his back during the budget debate to Dennis Hollingsworth, the senator from the Inland Empire. But Vallines said he knew he was ready to leave. The question is, was the timing all his own, or was the caucus ready for this move? And then the other question I have, and maybe your intel is pretty good because I really haven't been picking up the phone on this one, is does the ascension of Blakeslee, who we can talk about some more, but does the ascension of Blakeslee show that the more diehard conservative part of that caucus hasn't gelled around someone yet? Or does it show the power of the lines to keep the agenda where it is for the time being?
I think it's a combination. I think the two scenarios are very different. The departure of Dave Cogdill in the heat. I mean, Cogdill was overthrown.
Middle of the night.
In the heat of the budget battle. Whereas Vallines, I think Vallines did a much better job of bringing his caucus along. I mean, even though there were only three Republicans who ended up voting for the final vote, there was a much more general understanding among the members of his caucus of how we got to this place. And I think Vallines did a better job than Dave Cogdill, frankly, keeping his caucus in the loop. And that although Vallines only got three votes for that budget, the minimum required, he had a lot more silent support from members of his caucus. And I think that, you know, if we're trying to read tea leaves here, I think that Blakeslee's ascension today, this week, is a testament to that ongoing support that Vallines has still within his caucus. I mean, look, nobody likes this budget situation. But the fact that we didn't get a strong conservative, someone like a Chuck DeVore or a Jeff Miller, and one of the more conservative members of the caucus who had expressed leadership interests in the past, the fact that the caucus did not choose a member like that to lead them, I think is a sign that maybe ideology isn't the best way to characterize it, but I think in terms of a political approach, the tenor of a Blakeslee-led caucus is not going to vary much from a Vallines-led caucus. Now, the reality is on May 20th, you know, one way or another, when we're faced with the next round of cuts and or fee increases, the reality is the Republicans are probably going to be irrelevant in this process anyway. Whatever gets done is probably going to be a what they call a simple majority package. We'll only need 41 votes, and that Democrats, who have 51 members in the Assembly, will have more than enough votes to do this on their own.
Well, and talking about Sam Blakesley for a minute, who, as you said, is a Republican from San Luis Obispo, very involved in the community before that.
And looks like Quentin Tarantino, kind of.
Maybe Tarantino. So. Maybe so. And I watched him at the local level a lot as a reporter on the Central Coast when he was there.
Home.
He was a trustee of a community college board. So he's been very active in that community. But he is very much a coastal Republican, which is this environmentally active but socially conservative. There is a strong social conservative streak in Blakesley. And what's interesting to me is how quickly the Republican right power structure, blogosphere, whatever you want to call it.
Those are one and the same, aren't they?
They are sometimes. But jumped on Blakesley when the rumors and the words started coming out on Wednesday. Capital Weekly confirmed sources. Saying he's way far to the left. And again, it showed this ongoing saga within the Republican Party. As much as they don't like to talk about it, as much as they like to knock down reporter theories of ongoing internal dissension among them, it showed once again that this is a party that really has trouble on a lot of fundamental issues and finding consensus and finding who it is. And so, yeah, you had a lot of diehard, really to the right conservatives, griping about Blakesley before the vote had even happened.
Well, and to be fair, I mean, some of this ideological debate exists on the Democratic side too. You see people like Rick Jacobs, who heads up something called the Courage Campaign, periodically taking shots at Dianne Feinstein.
I guess the difference is the Republicans not being in power, it's harder for them.
Well, and I think that's it. That their numbers are smaller.
Yeah.
And so those dissensions proportionally feel like a much larger piece of the whole. I mean, I really do think that that's a lot of what we're dealing with. But no, I mean, the conservatives who I spoke to yesterday were not happy. And you see some of that in the blogosphere, as you mentioned. And yet, I believe the vote today was by acclamation, of course. In the end, it's always unanimous, right? That Blakesley is the choice to head the caucus. Now, you can argue that this just delays a larger fight, that Blakesley will be termed out at the end of 2010, and that by this time next year, we could be talking about a new Republican leader. And maybe that's the place where the ideological fight will take place. But for now, the job and the gavel and the big office belong to Sam Blakesley.
And the last thing I would say on this is Blakesley is termed out in 2010. Dennis Hollingsworth, the new Republican leader of the state Senate, is termed out in 2010.
Karen Bass,
the Assembly Speaker, is termed out in 2010.
Arnold Schwarzenegger.
But only Darrell's – well, yeah, and Arnold Schwarzenegger. Yeah. There you go. So of the big five, four of them are leaving in about a year and a half's time.
Ain't term limits grand?
Yeah, and so we'll get a whole new dance card of people to watch.
And I'm sure there are plenty of people who would say, hey, look, could new people do much worse than what we've got now? There are others who would say it's the newness of everybody that partially got us into this mess.
Therein lies the nature of politics, debated until the bitter end.
Talk amongst yourselves.
All right. Well, with that, let's pivot out of the studio, shall we?
Let's.
It's my last pivot for the week.
That was traveling.
Yes. All right, sharply dressed man. Anthony York from Capital Weekly there. I'm John Myers from KQED. We'll see you next time.